petition number 22128, Rule 2.
Wilkinson, Rule 2.
When they got back to Scapa, they decided to see if it was possible to change the gun barrels without having to go to a dockyard. So we were a fortnight in Scapa changing the gun barrels on board, whereas most of us got leave, right? We were stuck in Scapa.
What was it like at Scapa?
Deadly. And only one place you could go cakewall, and the only thing there was a naval canteen, which I wasn't really a drinking man, so I never went. Well, I think I went once to see what it was like, but I never went any more. After we changed our gun barrels, we were straight out to Aden. So we'd gone from the Arctic to the semi-chocolates in less than 3 weeks.
Which did you prefer?
Oh, I like the hot weather. Yeah.
Was it not too hot for you?
No, not really. Not too hot. It was glad to be at sea, in a way, because we had wind scoops out, as long as there was no action stations, and they give you a nice draft through the mess deck, like. And if you was on deck, it was all right, and we slept on deck. I mean, I never saw my hammock for about 2 years. Actually, once we got on deck, just all I had was a strip of canvas about 6 foot long and a little bed cover and a pillar, and I just used to lay it on the deck, my pillar and my bed cover, and that was my bed.
Could you be comfortable?
Yeah, it's fairly born, some got used to it. Now, when you first laid on the... Well, we used to go up forward and just lay against the gun, so it was handy. And it was a wooden deck at that bit. And your hip bones used to ache for a few weeks, like, but you soon got used to it. And we were quite comfortable, actually. I think when we went, we called in at Plymouth, I think, on our way to. That was Plymouth, and next stop was Gib. Next stop, Malta. And on to Alexandria. And through the canal to Aden. We was based there for 11 months. There was a convoy from Aden where did we go to? About halfway up the Red Sea, anyway.
Sudan?
No.
Massawa?
Massawa. I think it was Massawa, yeah. And there was one trip, I think it was a Blenheim we had, as escort, and it crashed. And we had, somehow, I don't know whether they got to know it had crashed, whether the pilot had said he was crashing or not, I don't know, but we turned round and nipped back, and all we found was a plane's wheel. And that's the only wreckage we found, with half a dozen sharks swimming round it. And that's, we never heard any more about it, like. We was there about 6 months in Aden. Then we went to Colombo for a refit. And that was one of the best times I've had in the Navy, because we were sort of honoured guests in Colombo in them days. Everywhere was open to us, the best hotels and Colombo Swimming Club had a nice swimming pool there and was all welcome guests there. And I don't think it was ever abused at all, wasn't the hospitality. A lot of the planters invited us out to the plantations for the Banyan feast.
A what feast?
Banyan.
What's that?
Just what they call a feast. I mean, yeah, I'm sure it was a Banyan. But it was a social gathering, you know, and a meal, like, all this outside. And when we was in Colombo doing the refit, each watch was sent up to a place called Dia Talawa, which was a rest camp up in the hills where it was a lot cooler. And you lived in huts and had natives doing the cooking, and for a rupee for the week, one of them would bring you a cup of tea in your bed every morning, right, to wake you up. You had no duties at all other than you had to go down the range a couple of times to do a shoot qualifying for your rifle badges, if you did qualify, like I never did.
Did you pay a rupee to get those services?
Oh, yes. all the hut did, like. We had a real good time there. There was a canteen which was well supplied, and they could go to at night, like. And stuff was quite cheap. And we went back to Carlisle, and the rest of the ship's company went up, like half of it went up at a time.
So you hadn't had any enemy action since Norway?
No, the Moonstone, which a trawler had captured an Italian submarine, but nothing to do with us, like they'd captured it on their own. And apparently I heard later that one of the K-class destroyers, Kimberley I think it was, Kandahar, had captured another submarine, those two captured and taken to Aden, but it's only about 6 months ago that I learned anything about the second one. We knew about the Moonstone, mate, but we never knew about the other one. I mean, it must have been while we were in Aden, mate. Oh, yes, we did. Things got a bit dodgy for the troops at one time in Somaliland. And we went and evacuated the troops from Djibouti.
What was that like?
Well, it was no panic at all, really. We claimed we shot down an Italian aircraft with depression on the guns. Can't believe it. But with the ship, we was offshore, and this plane came in low over the land. And with the ship rolling, as we fired, the guns were pointing, you know, with depression. Because you could depress so much below horizontal, right? And the men would chop one down, but I say it was all full supported.
See it come down?
No. Well, I wouldn't have seen it anyhow, because I was enclosed in the gun shield, like. And your eyes, you're following pointers there. The director is onto the target, and you're following your pointers. And that's all you do see, like, your sighting ports up, unless you get orders to fire over open sight or anything, you're just following your pointers. Well, you don't see anything.
What condition were the troops in whom you evacuated from Djibouti?
Ah, they were all right.
Do you know
another yarn we heard about the old walrus from one of the cruisers. They had very little bombs, you know, or hand grenades and stuff like that, about the size of it. And they said the pilot went out of his bombs, so I threw a toolkit at him. But all these are yarns, you know. Could be sailors' yarns, there could be some truth in it. With very little air support at all. And, well, right slow, they were where I was. The only plane we ever saw in Norway was a short shot just to Sunderland. The only plane we ever saw there. The only plane we ever saw, we didn't see this plane in Aden, that was shot down. We never saw it. There were none in Djibouti apart from this walrus. We never got any air support later on. But, after we thought it was safe, the Italians had all been cleared up, and the troops had cleared them up as well, like, you know, there's all prisoners of war then, was the Italians. They sent us back to the Med, and we went to Alexandria. Before we got to Alexandria, though, we had to stop in Suez. The canal had been mined, and there was delayed action acoustic or magnetic mines. Maybe two ships had gone off of it, and it exploded on the third one. So they had people straight throughout the canal. There was big buoys in the middle of the canal, because if two ships passed, I think one was supposed to tie up while the other one got past. And they had sailors on these buoys at night looking for them dropping the mines. And they'd report where any mines were dropped. We had two divers on board Carlisle, and they borrowed both of them and then them sent him down looking for these mines. I don't know whether our lads got them, but they got some. And that's when they found out there was delayed action acoustics or magnetics, like. Now they cleared the canal, and there'd been one or two ships sunk in it, but we managed to get through it. Very, very carefully passed some of them, like, you know, didn't have a lot of room. We went back to Alex, and then we was convoying to Greece for a short time.
What was that like?
Well, I think it's the coldest I've ever been, believe it or not. After being in the Arctic, like, mind you, I was dressed for it. I think being down the Red Sea for so long, 11 months, apparently you're in the heat, your blood thins. And it was snowing when we were in the crate. I was on watch on the forward gun, like, and the real strong wind and snow and whatnot. That was the coldest I've ever been, was that. Only one, just the one night, like, when we had this snow. I mean, when you're stuck there for 4 hours at a time, it can get a bit cold.
Did you get attacked by the enemy at Crete?
At Greece, yeah, with a few attacks. Especially when we went back to evacuate it. The thing was, when we got back to Alexandria after being down the Red Sea, they suddenly decided one of our prop shafts was bent. And it'd been bent in Norway, apparently, from near misses there. They couldn't do it in Alexandria, so they took it out, and it went to Malta on a submarine, left to the deck of a submarine. And we evacuated Greece on one screw, which was a bit awkward, because you couldn't really manoeuvre, like, you know, you just do one screw. It's amazing what with twin screws, how your twin screws can manoeuvre going one head and one astern, you see. We didn't suffer any casualties at Greece. But I don't know how many troops we did bring back, but they brought quite a lot.
Were they packed into the ship?
Oh, yeah. The motorboats, we had two motorboats, two whalers, and I think they sent them ashore. Motorboats towing the whalers to bring the people off, like, because we couldn't get anywhere near the place they were evacuated from. And we had as many as we could really carry, well, as many as we could pick up, actually, because we were supposed to be away by about 4 o'clock to get clear of the land without still dark. Something like that. And yeah, we was a bit late in leaving. And we was attacked more or less most of the way back to Alex, but we didn't suffer any casualties up to Alex, so Crete, we took them to Crete. But mostly Anzacs and New Zealanders we picked up.
How did they behave?
Oh, very well. Oh, I mean, they was that glad to get off, because they'd been chased for miles and miles by the Germans, right? And we did a few convoys to Crete. And our prop shaft came back from Malta, so we went into dry dock in Alex, putting the prop shaft back. And just as we got it back, the invaded crate. Well, when you go and dry dock, you de-ammunition, take all the ammunition out, like, so... We sunk, it was a floating dock. We sunk the floating dock. A little tanker sort of thing come one side, ammunition barge the other side, and we're checking on fuel and ammunition. When they'd got the fuel, the water boat came alongside, we're checking on water. And our cap jumped off the ship and went onto the water boat. Which was rather unusual. Yeah, we went to Crete and a few skirmishes on the way there. Picked up a lot more troops to evacuate. And when we was coming back, we had a bomb hit number two gun right between the gun barrels. And they were just bent like sticks of licorice with the two gun barrels. At the same time, we had a near miss on our gun forward. And I just thought we was diving to the bottom because the water was still the sighting ports at both sides, at Gunlay's side and the trainer's side. And I thought we were just going straight down to the bottom. And we didn't know we'd been hit. Down at this at the same time. Those three Ju-87s came in and all sort of at the same time as one cleared, the other one dropped his bomb. Anyhow, next day we'd all got soaked, absolutely, the gun school, everybody was soaked and went a fag between us. And there was a bit of a lull and we had a lieutenant commander at officer of the quarters because they always split the officers up. So that if anything happened, the alternate officer in charge somewhere. In fact, when we got bombed, they came down machine gunning and the captain was killed. So after they dropped the bombs, they used to say, everybody lie down, because he's dropped his bombs, there's no more danger to you, so you might as well lie down and get clear. And he was the only one on the bridge who didn't lie down, and he was machine gunned and killed. Yeah, I was saying next day we had Lieutenant Commander, he went aft and fetched a couple of tins of tobacco packed cigarettes in tins of round tins of 50s we used to get. And he left them for the gun school, like. And a bit after that the Chief Ordnance Officer came in and this Lieutenant Commander Robertson said to him, "How's number two gun, Chief?" Oh, he says it'll never fire again. And that's the first we knew about it. It was the next day. And quite a few of the gun school had been killed. It was all, well, our dad was sent to hospital, like. Because as soon as we went to action stations, we used to get ammunition out and lay it all round the gun. So it didn't matter where we were pointing, there was always ammunition handy. And a lull in the storm, he used to fill up the bitches used. Well, apparently all this ammunition had exploded. The cartridges had, and the shells were spinning around the deck like tops. They hadn't exploded. And in the waist, which is each side of the ship, we had 2 50-gallon drums of petrol for the motorboat. All that had gone up in flames and all. And, Lieutenant Commander, who was on that gun, he made all the lads get away, and he went in himself and tried to pull out what he could, like. And there he was. When he found out the captain had been killed, he took over command of the ship, like, because he was the first lieutenant. There was one lad, Bob Sylvie. He always said the safest place when the lad said lie down was under the gun barrels between the mountains. This lot had collapsed on him. And we couldn't get him out till we got to back to Alex and had the crane to lift the guns like that. This shows you.
Where did he come from?
From Hull. left at Ricketts. They were all from Holland District on the two guns, like, you know, Hull, Beverley, Arnsey, a couple from Withernsey. After that, we went to Portishead for repairs. And we got 72 hours leave each watch, so most of us went up to Cairo, Lake. And then we came back. Oh no, I was second lift, so a lot of them had gone up to Cairo. And then they come back. It's Mike Osgerby. I said to him, "What do you think of the pyramids, Mike?" "Just a heap of bloody stones," he said. He was from Beverley, on a late computer. And they called him Raymond, actually, but we had a Ray Osgerby and a Ray Kell on the guns crew. So he always got Mike for some reason. I mean, I still call him Mike, like. But, when we was fighting fit again, we came back through to Alex. Then we was dispatched to Haifa. They were expecting the Germans to carry on from Greece and sort of come round and invade Egypt from that way. So they decided to jump in first because the Lebanon was held by the French, and the Aussies went through and they had a few skirmishes with the French. We had a few skirmishes with French destroyers, and then we went and we bombarded Beirut.
What was that like?
No opposition at all then. Went in, next day we went in Beirut, breath, and went ashore, you know. Best of friends, right?
What were your targets on shore?
No, it was not so much on it, was the French army, I think, they were after him. Hindering the advance of the Australians. But it didn't really last long, only 2 or 3 days, I think.
What did your actions against the French destroyers amount to?
We didn't actually see any, but they'd hit a couple of our destroyers, and one of them had lost its bows. And it went back to Haifa astern. Managed to get back to Haifa, and what happened after that, I don't know, because after most after Beirut, we went back to Alex again.
To do what?
Well, we went through the canal again. They had Fokker Wolf, German Fokker Wolfs, was bombing the ships in Port Suez, that was at the far end of the canal, and we went there as Attack Guard. Then they hit a couple of ships there, that the Georgia was one, it was absolutely burnt out. So they anchored the ships at the end of the Gulf of Suez, and they just came up and was ready for discharge, and we used to have a week down there as Attack Guard, and a week in Suez as Attack Guard. And they raided Suez nearly every other night. So we was up all night firing, most of the night. And unfortunately, our ammunition was at Ismailia, which was halfway down the Suez Canal. So by the time we got it to replenish our stores, it was night time, so it was up after night then. Bring the ammunition in. I didn't get a lot of sleep that week. Quite down Anchorage Ferry. I don't think we had any action at all down there, as I remember. And that's when I left her. That's when I left her to join the Phoebe.
What was the Phoebe?
It was a cruiser. Twin 5-2-5 guns. she'd been hit at Crete, at the Battle of Crete, and she'd a big hole in her side. You know, they'd plated her up in Alexandria, and then they'd filled up the big hole inside with empty cartridge cases. There was this bigger stuff. The charge was in like a cloth bag on the bigger armament, and your ammunition went up in two pieces, like, and these cloth bags was in a big sort of like cardboard, it wouldn't be cardboard, but it was like a big carton with a lid that went right over for about 6 inches, and they filled up the hole with these as extra buoyancy, like, in case anything else happened. And then we went from Alex through the canal again, because I'd been through the canal twice more from west to east than I'd been from east to west. See, I'd left her in Port Suez to join Alexandria at Thebes, so I'd gone one way there. And then when we was going home, we had to go around the Cape, but we was taking the Phoebe to America. I think our first stop was Mombasa. We stopped there for fuel. And after we left Mombasa, the old man decided to do, I think she must have carried torpedoes. So I remember we fired, I'm sure we fired torpedoes and had to go and pick them up in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Which wasn't very good fun, mind you, it was nice and calm at the time. And I think we went from Mombasa to Simonstown. That was a funny little port. It was more or less the oiling port for Cape Town. But you went in a real narrow entrance, and then you had to be pulled round by wires, so straight onto the jetty. You'd got no room to manoeuvre. You know, you went in and then they pulled you round with wires. Well, you used your own wires, obviously. You went sideways to the jetty to oil. And there we went to Durban. It was in Durban a couple of days. You know, one of the lads, his father was in the Merchant Navy, or had been in the Merchant Navy, and he was in the Royal Navy now. He was a commander in Durban. And he had to buy his son a civvy suit so he could go out with him. Because obviously he wasn't allowed to go out with a beating. And that's what he did. It was George Chestnut's father.
George who?
Chestnut. And then from Durban, went to Trinidad, called in Trinidad, I think.
Were you just sailing by yourself?
Well, sure, yeah.
How did you like being in this ship after the Carlisle?
Well, it was a lot better. There was power-operated turrets in this ship. All you had to do was sit there, we had them. I mean, on the Carlisle, I forgot to tell you, and all with the, when it's near miss at Crete, it had lifted the gun right up. And after that, I could hardly turn the handles to turn it. And the lads had to get round and shove it with a big change, you know. If say we'd been firing to port and we'd just fired to starboard, well, at least I had to get round the side and push it, help me push it round. Well, that was, say, that was after Crete. And on the ferry, I say it was all power operated. All you did was just turn the handle and the valve opened and the gun turned round. And it was a totally enclosed turret as well, as opposed to all the back wing open. So these were bigger guns, they were 5.25.
So did you?
All your ammunition came up the hoist inside the turret. So you only needed a couple of loading numbers, sort of thing. I was on Carlisle, there was about 18 in the gun school, I think. We found out that we needed two more than they expected to clear the empty shells away. And we were firing about, on both barrels, about 24 a minute. That was 12 each barrel, like. And because when you're loading, you haven't got time to kick the empty shells out. So they put two more lads